You ready, Laura? Sorry.
Go.
Okay. So if we want to go around and do roll call, Bill, you want to start?
Yeah. Present.
Laura Hilty Park, admin.
Kelsey Potter, PAB.
Chip Path, PAB.
Dave Weston, PAB.
Jeremy Newton, staff.
Jay Chester is here, PABing, but on a phone call. All right. So if we want to go to our meeting minutes from May. Wow.
Not much there.
Pretty intense.
That must have been a busy meeting.
Yeah. we have a motion to
approve. I'll move.
Okay, anyone second it?
I really don't like seconding my
it.
Own.
Okay, I'll
minutes.
Second it. All in favor?
Aye.
We'll double check with Jay when he returns. Is everyone okay with that, or do you want to linger here? Okay. All right, so we're going to go straight into the code discussion. I know John emailed, did he email
his
thoughts?
He emailed us, and very minor changes as kind of housekeeping items.
Okay.
Not a lot. And so we kind of breezed through them. And I have not had a chance to even catch up with since our last meeting. Just busy with everything else.
And again, I think if we slow roll this, I mean, it doesn't seem like an urgent issue. I just kind of want to get some dialogue if people have some things they're interested in maybe tweaking or changing.
Are we talking about code?
Yeah.
I had one that caught my eye when I was going through it. And it's kind of confusing and potentially a loophole. So it's the dog leash area section. And the first 15, 20 dogs off premises to be leashed, that's the general for the county. And then the exceptions are what kind of caught my eye. Lawful training and preparation for such herding, hunting, competitive activities, which, I mean, I know dog events are becoming big. And then you go down to 040, and it's talking about dogs are required to be on leash within the urban growth boundary. So,
which section of the code are you?
Oh,
815,
right here.
0, 20, 30, and 40.
Does this pertain, this section specifically to parks?
No.
No.
I mean, we don't have the, I don't know that we even have the jurisdiction to make any changes to it. We'd have to involve community development.
I think I included them because of the dog park conversation.
So I guess my question is if this county code overrides the park code, I mean, so if I go down and I'm throwing dummies for a dog in a county park, for example, and it's hunting training, I just see a potential conflict here.
Yeah.
And
which section of the 905 do you think it's in conflict with? So I can look at that too.
Off the 905. It's the general rules, whereas. D, 1D, permit any animal to be unleashed or untethered at any time, except as provided in section, which is 815.20, which takes us back to this leash law, which has an exception down at the bottom that could be pretty broad when applied to a park. I'm thinking Frenchman's Bar, you have water. I mean, there's a lot of potential for issues. I mean, if I'm looking at a way to run my dog off leash legally, that's what I'm going to.
So this reference to 8.115.020,
right
after rethinking that.
Exactly, and I don't know why it was tied together, probably because it was the county leash law, but.
Well, the way I read it is, okay, so maybe, help me understand
maybe where I'm misunderstanding, because the way I read it is you can, we can, it's unlawful to permit any animal to be unleashed or untethered except as defined in this 8.15.020 number 2, which is about dogs that are allowed to run off in off-leash areas, which we have, right?
Right. So then you don't think the exception to 020, the whole section, would apply?
I would, the way I would interpret it is that they're off allowed off leash, but only in designated off leash areas, like we have one at Vancouver Lake or like Pacific Park or those kinds of places.
Yeah.
But having said that, I haven't read through the whole entirety of number 2, just that first couple of sentences.
Right. No, I see what you're saying. It's just if I read number 2 under 020, and then I read, oh, here's the exceptions for 020, and there's exceptions to the rules 021 and 2. I mean, that's where I'm directing.
Okay. Yeah.
So I don't know. Amanda can look at it too. That was one concern I saw that
could be an issue.
Okay.
Somebody's going to come up with something,
you
know, and say, oh, well, that's not...
I am in favor of not having them in the parks, but at the same time, I think we should look at ways to allow that somewhere in the county for an activity, because it is popular.
Yeah, I agree. Like, and it's becoming more and more popular. We're seeing, I see it all the time. I get regular requests for it. And what's nice about the way that a lot of this is written is it's written fairly general.
Right.
To your point... remote control model airplane, and if we add or aircraft, that covers covers drones. I mean, we could specify drones, but then you don't. What's the next?
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Right? But if you specify drones, it'll knock out some of those questions you get, some of those phone calls you get.
Yeah.
Because you didn't specifically say drones.
Is this an acronym? UOAs.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Right? It says this.
Right. UAS.
So,
UAS.
UAVs.
Yeah.
Something
that
like
that. Seems to be both aircraft as well as
drones. And so the way it's written right now, those kinds of things are prohibited in parks, but we have the authority to issue permits to allow them, which we can.
Can we say something except in designated areas or?
It does say that.
Designated areas.
I don't have it in front of me. By the Parks Division, proposals for such use. With the prevention of
the I mean, there are times when they're fine and they're interesting, but there's times when they're not either. So. I mean, when we were on vacation this last time down in Mexico, there was actually one that came along the beach. I had not seen them down there, but they, you know, we were staying at a beachfront place, and all of a sudden, you know, I hear this little buzzing sound, and my wife looks at me and goes, "What's that?" And I thought, "I think that's a drone." Sure enough, it came right up. You know, I don't know what it was doing, but then it went away. And, you know, because they're everywhere now. I mean, you know, it's just nuts. Now they're going around.
Well, the thing is you can say that they can't operate in the park, but if you're off the park premises and that thing flies over your space, it's like almost unenforceable. You just can't find them, you can't catch them, you can't shut them down. Use your shotgun, maybe, and have some target practice or something. But I think, does it say you can't do it unless you got the permission or the area designated? I would like the UAS or whatever the acronym is in that one, because I think that's more universal. That would be what you're looking into. I would do that.
When people are calling to do it properly and ask for permission, are we generally always giving them a permit or permission to do so?
For the most part, we have not issued permits for it.
Okay.
And part of it, what we've kind of talked about internally is, okay, so the code's written in such a way that it's prohibited unless you get permission. So then what is our criteria for then giving them permission? So the idea would then be, okay, we should probably come with a come back to you and have a policy that says, hey, as a rule, we don't allow it, but we can issue permits for it. And if you meet these criteria, then we'll issue a permit for it. So it gives us the ability to say no, but for the most part, we would want to try to find ways to let people recreate as long as they're following. Essentially, what it amounts to is probably federal guidelines, since they've recently issued standards.
Yeah, planes file flight plans. I mean, we could maybe do a watered-down version of what are you going to do with it, how long are you going to have it up, when are you going to fly.
And that's what you do from a commercial aspect. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not hard to just... Going through an FAA takes forever.
Okay. So if we were to issue a permit, we'd have to spell out whatever the requirements are. But really what we need to do is have something that is like a clear criteria for people so that we can just say here, you know, so it's not subjective, it's objective, and they can see exactly
what it is. Yeah, I think you want to know where they're flying in.
Yeah.
You know, what the purpose is for. You know, there might be like a big special event, like we have a big regatta, and they want to go send a drone up so they can actually videotape the entire crowd. That makes sense.
Shouldn't we ask if it has a videotape or a camera? I think they all do too, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know. If we knew what it did, what would we do with that information? That's the other thing. I don't know that we'd do anything with it.
Yeah.
Or could do anything with it.
But that sort of makes sure that they stay out of nature-sensitive areas and those things. That's one of my bigger concerns.
Yeah.
Oh, and like I said, Florida, I know the public parks are not private, but we just still need to be recorded, you know. And I guess from what Amanda said in the past, as long as you're not recording their voices, I believe. Okay, is that right, Amanda?
Right, you can't hear you.
When it comes to drones, it says as long as they're not recording voices talking, is that correct?
Legally, you can't take a picture, you can't fly above other people.
You can't even take a picture of other people.
Well, I suppose you could, but in order to get it, you have to be involved. So you have to get permission to be involved. So that's the way that works.
I mean, the cameras. We can take a picture from a long way away with our drones. So.
But it's legal to take a picture of a person on your cell phone if they're in a public space, just not above them.
So we're talking about the permitting process, what's allowable, what's not allowable, a policy that could be a good idea, so we can refer to them, we can actually zip it out by email, that kind of thing. So call as policy.
Sound good to everyone? Okay. John, you sent your kind of ideas, right, an email about... Were there any big policy changes, or were they just sort of verbiage?
Yeah, I passed something to Laura last time. I have no clue what it said at this point.
Okay.
There wasn't anything big, there were some minor thoughts.
I didn't include them in here, so I apologize, but make sure that you're in that. don't know if I want to open Pandora's box on this. I just want to present it as a discussion issue. So I did a little bit of research on smoking in parks, and Camas does not allow it. Vancouver, Portland, Seattle. I contacted Richfield because it's not on their website, and no one's gotten back to me. Washougal got back to me and said it's pretty much what our policy is, where it's not allowed near playgrounds.
Which pretty much follows state, right?
Well, I was in a state camp campground. It was Oregon State, but it said you could only smoke in your vehicle or in your campsite. So again, I'm just going to kind of throw it out there. Do we?
What's this?
I had it. Now I lost it. Hold on.
Tobacco products. 90528.
Yes. So right now, it's restricted within the immediate areas of playgrounds and play areas, public restrooms, shelters, and gazebos, and public events at parks, ball fields, or public beaches. So, I mean, our playgrounds really, so Washougal, Suzanne was saying, like, their playgrounds have signs around it that say no smoking near the playground and stuff. We don't really have any signage. I would at least, I don't know if I want to promote a full-out ban in parks, but maybe, if I know money's tight, but maybe promoting some sort of signage, at least around playground areas.
I know we have signs in some of our parks, probably the big regional ones, but I don't think any of those are provided by the Department of Health.
I've seen them on the rest. That's what I was thinking. Maybe Diana has some kind of connection with some kind of health organization that could be a help with that.
Donated somehow. I think we probably ran out of them, and they're expensive to make, so that's probably why some of our neighborhood parks don't have them.
Yeah, and again, I would take this as, I don't know if the political enthusiasm from this board, from the county councilors, would be behind a full-out ban. But I do, and I don't think it's going to do anything, honestly, to curb the amount of cigarette butts in our parks, which are insane. But talking to Karen, who does the cigarette butt cleanup for the city parks, too, it's outlawed there, and there are still tons of cigarette butts. But I do want to promote maybe some healthier spots in parks where kids are playing, that they shouldn't have to breathe secondhand smoke while they're playing on the jungle gym. I mean, and we don't really have any signs up that say you can't do that. Yeah, you can't sit on the park bench and smoke and blow your smoke near the kids.
So one thought you could do right away is that state law, or is it federal? It's probably state. Says you can't smoke within 25 feet of an entrance.
Yes.
So you could copy that over to this and say you're at least 25 feet away from any playground, etc.
Yeah, the way
so
it's defined
up this
now
that much.
Immediate area. So that would probably be tighten that up rather than so what's an immediate area? Is that 5 feet away?
That's
a good point.
I have to say, when I do events out on my farm, I started off by trying to ban smoke altogether. And I had several prospective groups just walk away for it, and I'm happy with that. But I find that you know, guests show up, they try to smoke. Instead of banning them, I've started giving them a specific area, and at least they're contained and they seem happy with that. So,
smoking kind of thing.
Yeah, well, basically, far away from everything else, and they generally actually will walk that extra 100 feet or so. So, like we've got all the money in the world, but is there any way where we could say designated areas only? And
yeah, might be kind of tough.
It's like you said, it's a big Pandora's box.
I kind of like the idea of actually establishing maybe a distance away from you know, features. That might be a good way to go. And if you're, say, 25, they'll be within the 20 feet range. So if you're 50, you know, that might be better.
I'd be more than happy to make it 50, personally.
Yeah.
25 feet.
Well, 50, you'll probably get 25. So
maybe the wall, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty close.
So... people aren't all in favor of an outright ban, it sounds like, correct?
I just don't think it's gonna.
Okay, so do we want to kind of pursue some better verbiage in the code that specifies some footage from, which instead of just saying play, because like there's nature play areas too, where kids are always sitting.
Areas?
Or? Any place where children are congregating?
Ooh, that could be the whole park, John.
Well, it does say play areas. Playgrounds and play areas. So play area could be very generic.
That's true.
A play area could be a skate park. A play area could be a badminton court.
Yeah.
You know, a pickleball court. I mean, it could be play areas where people are playing.
Play areas or points of interest.
So that gives a lot of, I think, room for interpretation. Not for room for room for. What am I trying to say?
I mean, the real gray area is obviously the open grass field.
True.
And yeah. That's the gray area. Now.
Yeah. Would we have to go through a huge rigmarole to just change immediate area to 50 feet from blank?
I mean, if we change one word, we got to go through a hearing process. So, what do we do? As well, sort of saying if we're going to make some changes.
Put it where we are.
Let's just do it, open the vote, go just do it. And hopefully we can kind of keep it pretty minimal, but at the same time, make those changes that really make a difference.
Okay. So are we kind of in agreement that 50 feet?
I'm in favor.
Yeah, because we have area could be like across the walkway from the play area.
Yeah.
10 feet away. It's not that far.
Okay. So 50 sounds good to people?
I'm in favor.
Okay.
And tobacco product is a liquid vaping?
That's the other thing I'd like to add to that section.
Yeah, I mean, the actual words.
Because it just smells so delicious.
So now they say all the signs they see now, they say no smoking or vaping. Like,
I know.
That's no.
All the signs they have.
Yeah.
Should we say tobacco or vaping products?
Yeah. And so who should we follow up with trying to get signs for our playground areas that don't have them?
You know what? So we've got signs. They're the really cutesy ones.
Uh-huh.
So kids on the swing sets and stuff like that, you know, and it says no tobacco products.
Yeah.
And they're kind of cartoonish. Those were probably $60-$70 a piece.
Okay.
And we had, they gave us like 80 of them, and we put them out in different parks. But these new parks, I don't think we have any more, so. We had the health department on a grant, actually bought all those.
Okay.
And so maybe I can talk to the health department to see if they can do that again.
That would be great.
So.
Because it's not really fair to have a rule that no one knows about. I mean, what's the point? You know, there's no science.
Well, income generation at that point.
Right. our park rule signs, it doesn't show
just
all
like
these
a speed
rules,
trap.
It just shows a small handful of them. So people don't really see this ever.
Yeah.
And so that's why we use the other signs out there to try to emphasize the rules. So, okay.
All right. Were there any other things people had issue with in the code?
So basically, county law enforcement enforces the park rules, correct? You don't have staff that enforce?
No. It's only Clark County Sheriff's Office and Animal Control would be the two law enforcement authorities.
So Vancouver Police enforces at Vancouver Lake and Central's Bar, inside city limits. CCSO does not go in to enforce there. They will go if there is an emergency to respond, but not enforce just on a regular basis. And then at Captain Wayne Clark Park, City Washougal PD goes in and performs law enforcement there.
And it's concurrent jurisdiction, so this I was state county lands, state county law.
Jurisdiction at all?
We can.
Yeah, with enforcement authority?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, I don't think any of us have, outside of maybe Seattle, might have a police force, but. I've often thought of it just because it'd be fun.
Yeah.
So the staff look at voluntary compliance, is that the staff basically does when they're out there and they see a violation that's notable, they want to take action. Like your maintenance crews or your staff go out there and say, folks, just let you know.
We can advise people that they're breaking the rules. We can't enforce them. But then we can also call them, you know, and get police out there.
So,
mostly.
Like at Frenchman's, for example, you'll get a lot of smoking or alcohol or whatever, right?
So I direct my staff, you know, hey, approach them, just let them know, hey, it's against the law, the code, and ask them to get rid of it, put it away, whatever. A lot of times they'll just get sand kicked in their face, and at that point, like, you don't need to engage with that. Just call law enforcement, and if and when the law enforcement is able to attend to it, then they can. So,
I have some law enforcement lock on the beaches. I've seen animal control lock on the beaches. They get up and get it.
All right, so we good?
This exclusionary rules has been pretty active recently. We've got an officer who's actually been excluding people from parks for a short period of time.
Oh, really?
For violations like smoking dope in a shelter.
Oh.
Actually excluded for 7 days.
That's a good rule.
Which is interesting. And I like that.
Does that work? If I were caught smoking dope and decided to go back the next day,
it's that same officer's there.
Well, then you're
So that's the one thing is you need consistent patrols.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, this officer decided to start taking upon himself to patrol a couple of our parks on a more regular basis, and they were doing.
That's cool.
Has it become trespassing at that point, or?
Yeah, criminal trespass. They can be actually hauled in, and so it's pretty interesting how it works. I always give big kudos for doing that because they're helping us. You know, I mean, the real true way to handle this in the off-leash area is through enforcement. That is really the answer. So, you know, we've always talked about getting a park ranger, you know, just does nothing but that addresses this kind of stuff, all the rules in the parks. But it's an expensive proposition. You know, it's probably a couple hundred grand a year if they have an officer and a vehicle. Expensive.
And then they have so thin, it'd be incredible.
Yeah, we'd almost need like two or three because it's nice to have a backup. So, and of course, you know, they can't work 7 days a week, two shifts a day.
So the exclusion is wide open. It's not 7 days. You can say, hey, a month, you can say a year, you can say whatever.
Yeah, it's good. 7 days.
That's good.
Eric, do you
want
to jack up the fine for parking infractions? 40 to something really fun, or are you good with that?
Yeah, the fee is perfectly fine.
Okay.
$1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, really, just people, what ends up happening is someone gets a ticket or people see enforcement and they're issuing citations, and that's all you need. Just being visible and being a presence is probably the number one thing, and from time to time, I will schedule overtime or patrols on weekends to either go and enforce parking or do an emphasis. Conduct emphasis patrols for off-leash or alcohol. And I tell them, I said, you know, you don't necessarily need to give issue citations, but let people know that, hey, your dog needs to be on a leash in this area or alcohol's not allowed. And people will come up and tell them how much they appreciate, like, the visibility and just being in the park to kind of enforce rules. Makes it a safer, cleaner place for everybody. Yeah. And then whoever has the dog off leash or has alcohol, if they don't get a citation, like, okay, thanks for not giving me a huge ticket, because a ticket for off leash or alcohol can be pretty huge. I think it's like $1,000. It could be up to $1,000.
Right.
And it's spelled out in here somewhere. I apologize. I should know that off the top of my head. But
is there a need to have anything in here about marijuana?
Smoking,
drugs. But drugs, it says state legal drugs, prohibited by state law. I don't know if it's a problem or not.
It's prohibited.
Consume in a public place. Consume means when public means when people can see. I think that's how it's written.
You can have cigarettes, but we can't smoke them, right? I mean, so.
Like you could have it in your pocket, but as long as you're not, I would.
That's a state law.
Yeah.
No public places. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does say use or have in their possession.
Yeah.
Any drug or narcotic.
That helps you.
That actually needs to be changed, probably, because this precedes the law, the state law that was implemented that allows for marijuana.
Okay.
Because this was actually revised in 2004.
Segways existed in 2004 because they're mentioned in here.
It seems like 2012. Okay, that's 2012. Okay, so that's still predated the marijuana law, but.
So do we need to update? Like it's 905-170, alcoholic beverages, drugs. Use or have in their possession any drug or narcotic, the sale, use, or possession of, which is prohibited by state law. So what we're saying is you can have it in your pocket. The state of Washington says you just can't consume it in a public place.
Yeah.
So we need to change this to say, to get rid of possession and just say use.
Well, but then,
well, that's just for marijuana.
You'd have to be very specific if that's what you want to address, because if you get rid of possession,
yeah,
then you can have any drug or which you don't want. So we'll say that.
You might
want
to, let's ask you.
I don't know, maybe Amanda would have some input on that too. But.
Amanda? So this section says use or have in their possession any drug or narcotic, the sale, use, or possession of which is prohibited by state law. But legally, you can have marijuana, like in a public place, you just can't consume it. So how do we word that without saying, oh, you can have like crack cocaine in your pocket too, or at the park?
Why do you need to change it all?
I was about to say,
because it says pursuant to state law.
Yeah.
It says which is prohibited by state law,
correct.
But it's not prohibited by state law anymore to have marijuana in your pocket, correct?
So you can have marijuana in your pocket.
So you can have marijuana in your pocket.
You just can't sell it or use it.
You can't do all the rest of it.
It says, or have in your possession. So right. Legally, you can have it in your possession in the park.
Use or, yeah, we're in possession of which is prohibited by state law.
Yeah.
It's not prohibited by state law.
Right, exactly.
That's what I'm saying. So we need to change what it says.
No,
right?
No, we don't need to change it. So state law currently says you can possess marijuana.
Uh-huh.
So the provision of our code says, except for what state law says, you can't have it.
Oh.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So
you
just leave it.
We don't have to come up with any. Okay. Good. All right. Any more for forever hold our peace on the parks code?
Until it comes up next.
At least for the next 6 years.
Alana?
I have a question about the 905-140. I don't know what page it is on. It is illegal to do that, except for permission, authorized by permission. So we have the, let's say, July 4th event. We can only tell those who are there for our event that they cannot do that, but then others come in and try to do things, you know, that will try to solicit. And also, I don't know if the political solicitation is separate from the goods and wares, or how is that being treated, because we've been told in the past we cannot stop that.
Yeah. Amanda, what's the story on political solicitation? Like we go in there into a park and representing a party or a candidate. Is that allowed?
Yeah.
Free speech.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, you can't keep out, that is such a huge free speech issue. So people collecting signatures for an initiative, whatever, can't kick them out. Someone who wants to come in there and say, vote for Joe Schmo, can't kick them out, you cannot.
What is the stipulations on if they're disturbing everybody? Have they
it's a different section.
So this sort of guy's going
to be sort of conduct, probably.
More than offensive. It has to be something like a threat. It has to be
by force.
Something where if you took the content of that speech out of that interaction, that person would still feel like, I need to call the police. I need to do something. So if they're spewing something you don't agree with, you cannot just say you need to leave the park.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. We have
as a First Amendment issue, that is the number one thing that will get us in trouble.
Yeah, we had a couple of people that we don't know if they were legitimate solicitors or not.
You can't ask.
No.
There's no such thing as legitimate or not.
Yeah. But allegedly, according to the parent that was approached, signatures from his parent. And the parent told me that he actually told the child that he was going to go to hell that way. Is that the truth?
I can't answer that question.
Okay, so when we have a permit, we're not protected against other public users of the park.
No. And you do not have exclusive use of the park at that point. It's a public space.
No, if they're threatening the parent or the child.
That's up to the parent to make that phone call if they want to call that.
Because our insurance states that we're responsible for all, and that is part of the permit requirement, right? So when the insurance says that by using the facility as provided in this agreement, the licensee agrees to indemnify in whole terms our county and their respective officials, administrators, employees, and so on and so forth for any damage or injury brought by me, my family, estate, whatever, which may be occasioned by or arising out of any accident, other occurrence, causing or inflicting injury and or damage to any person, injury, damage to your property, which may result from the use of this facility and the surrounding park grounds. And that's what my insurance agent has a problem with, and that's why we're paying double the insurance that we would otherwise pay.
Yeah. That's not
for an event that is free to the public and designed to be educational outreach.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a really unique situation when somebody comes in with a political aspiration and wants to get their word out on your event. And so, like Amanda said, it's problematic because it is a First Amendment right. And so I know there's no real clear answer to that.
But then also we cannot stop others. I mean, we don't have the right to stop others from peddling, even though it's a deal with our students right here.
So.
And then they come into our event and we say in our advertising, in the poster, we say no sales.
And then they're coming in
anyway. What are they selling?
Somebody was selling candy, trying to sell candy, so we have the stores off site. But, how do we enforce this particular thing when it's an event? Because this only addresses something when it's a person against the park, not a person against the event organization.
We're still inside.
This is the code for the parks. That's all I can tell you. That we're just looking at what rules we are creating for the parks. If there's an issue regarding the insurance, perhaps you need to see an attorney to try to get that stuff sorted out. But this is what the park rules are. We cannot access the parks. We cannot tell somebody what they can and cannot say. And we cannot limit somebody's right to make political speech. So there.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's not just the political speech. It's just the people that are coming, even though we say no sales. But is there a way to post something on the park sign that specifically addresses no sales, peddling, hockey, or anything?
That's not a legal question.
That's not
a verbal is going to be put on
the
sign.
So, yeah, we can for the day, you can check a piece of paper and say no vending or whatever, and just cite the county code, because it's not on the sign itself. On the park rules.
Okay.
And so just add a piece of paper onto our park rule signs and cite the county code, then you'll be okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Anything else on code? We're good. All right. So, next steps, you guys are going to kind of doctor the things we talked about today, and then you'll come back to us and we'll.
So, we'll draft amendments or changes and then come back for you guys to review next month. And then we can also. Probably simultaneously, we should have like a draft.
Yeah, with track changes on it.
Yeah.
So we can see what the changes are.
Perfect.
And then draft your own policy.
Yeah.
Just to
yes.
Could be a companion to that. It makes sense, I think.
Perfect.
Good.
All right, we're good? Okay, thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
Have fun at your kindergarten performance.
Thank you.
You're performing at the kindergarten?
Going back to school.
He's the soloist. All right, so you want to bounce back to the top, Jay, probably?
Sure, yeah.
So, PIP update with Bill.
So, PIP update on our package here, showing us the updates. Remember, if you recall, we didn't have the updates last month. So this is April, or March and April, is that correct?
Yes.
So March and April is what you're looking at. And so you can see what has come in. You're gonna see some deficits coming out, largely because like in PIP 3275 combined, and PIP 5, Otto Brown is actually being constructed right now. That money's actually being utilized. So that's why you're seeing that going into the negative as far as earnings. So. Well, that park is going to inevitably be about $1.1 million to construct. And I hear it's coming along very, very well right now. It's supposed to be done in July. And so it's looking really good. So it's kind of fun. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit. But field trip, we might go out there and just take a look at it. And it'll actually probably be done by the time we get out there. So. Still bringing lots of monies in. I did talk about this yesterday at our meeting that the monies are coming in at a good clip, and it's allowing us to step up our game on developing parks, which is really cool. So any questions on this? And what you're seeing here? So development is hot right now, and so monies are coming in at a really good pace, so I'm really appreciating that.
All right, Lewis and Clark Trail
update. So we had a meeting not so long ago, Kevin Jarvis, which was wonderful. And that was actually put on by the Intertwined Alliance and the National Park Service. So the basic premise was to talk about integrating trails in with wildlife. You know, how can they can coincide together. And so our target audience was the Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife, which is actually where we held the venue. And we had the folks from the refuges there. And then we actually had some other user groups. We had Portland Metro, which was there, which was very helpful because they've done a lot of trail studies in the past. And so good discussion on how we can integrate trails in without blocking wildlife or hindering them, you know, best practices, best locations. And it was kind of designed to really start a dialogue, break down some barriers as to, you know, putting that trail up, you know, north of Vancouver Lake, up and through state lands, through national wildlife lands. How can we do that? Alternatives, that kind of thing. And so that was kind of let's take a step back from the actual focus of the trail and talk about this. We wanted to really kind of get off on a sound footing with all of our different user groups and start kind of anew with them. Our next meeting that has yet to be scheduled is going to be with those kind of same groups and talking about actual length of the trail. And so I don't know if there's going to be any follow-up from this last meeting. I didn't see that with our groups, but we have been experiencing some pushback from Washington Fish and Wildlife because our trail is going to be going through hunting grounds, and that's a problem because that is where they make their monies, you know, through permits, licenses, and if we're hindering their hunting grounds, then that could affect their bottom line. With regard to the National Wildlife Refuge, that S River unit is drive only. So they would really, truly have to change their management practices on that piece of property to allow for a multi-use trail. The concern was brought up about dogs. You know, how do we keep people on the trail and not going out into the wildlife areas and hindering wildlife? And so that whole discussion took place. And so was that commemorated in notes? Do you recall?
It was not, other than the fact that they were going to put notice together from that meeting.
Yeah, we just haven't seen those yet.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So there'll be like a white paper/report that will come out of that meeting, from my understanding. Did
Did you understand that?
I did too, yeah. From all the notes that were taken on the poster boards. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so those have been transcribed and sent to both Gann and to David Cohen. And then they're going to take that as well as the report that came from Metro and some other places to try and put something together.
It's interesting that, like in Department of Fish and Wildlife, you get U.S. Fish and Wildlife as well, and that's kind of who funds the national parks or the national wildlife refuges. But within Washington Fish and Wildlife, you've got this group over here, a group of designers, and they want to see things get done. And you have the other group, which manages the lands. And so there's kind of two different camps, you know, within that building. And so the one camp is there, the other camp, the ones that are working with the Shilliku project on, that want to design and open up the Buckwire Slough project, and they're asking us about this highway. Hey, you're going to take this right away over. That's the one group, and the other one group says, hey, can you use some other alignment besides the highway? You know, and so that's kind of where we're at right now, is trying to work through that. So I did not see the other group there, so Nicole was not there, but hopefully we can come to some form of compromise as to how we're going to address this. A lot of good ideas came up and from Fish and Wildlife, and so I was really appreciative of that. And so once we get the notes back, we'll share those with you so we can see what was discussed and how we're going to be moving forward. So I'm a little concerned that, you know, if we go away from the alignment that we've kind of predetermined that we want to be on, it's going to be very hard to meet access, you know, all abilities access issues. It's going to be much, much more expensive because we're going to be crossing water bodies, you know, more frequently, which means, you know, million-dollar bridges, that kind of stuff. So I'm in the kind of the mindset, let's make this happen, but let's try to do it without jamming down the throats. So it's kind of a difficult spot that we're in right now.
There didn't seem to be any direct opposition whatsoever. It seemed that there were some good collaborative efforts to try and throw out different ideas about how we can get by stuff.
Yes.
Some of it sounded like it was going to be pretty expensive.
Yes.
Depending upon where it was. The one comment I got, Sandra, what was her title? Sat at the end of the table, kind of close to me.
Yeah, she's a supervisor at the Department of Fish.
Yeah. She's a doctor.
I wrote down a quote of hers because I kind of caught it. It says, well, what's the biggest impact to your area? Sandra says, people. Yeah. So there was a mindset there that, you know, trails and people mix, but there was also a real good collaborative effort to try and find a way forward.
Yeah.
A lot of expertise and no, you can't build a trail. It was right. Like that.
Yeah,
and that was encouraging.
And she's from the camp that they manage the wildlife refuge, and protecting the wildlife is their number one task. That is it, you know.
Isn't there a federal thing to get more people?
Yes.
Perhaps not into the wildlife refuges, but at least aware of them and more access.
Yeah, that's where the U.S. Fish and Wildlife comes
from. That's the U.S., yeah.
Yeah, so...
But not so much on the state level.
Correct, yeah.
Well, the good news is the U.S. is bigger than the states.
So the U.S. Fish and Wildlife has been really promoting more tourism in our state lands and national lands, And so I got a feel there's some tension between the groups, and so
I also know that there's some organizations that are opposed to it on the wildlife hunting side, and game departments getting pressure from them as well.
Makes sense.
That's another thing, like Ducks Unlimited, those groups.
There's quite a few groups,
and we attended a meeting out there at WDFW. And they had one singular voice. It was a room full of people, but they had one voice, and that's, do not block our ability to hunt. You know, so now this is just talking about the Shilliku project, which they want to bring, you know, do some sediment recovery in there. And the hunters are worried about that affecting their ability to hunt, whether the lands are going to be flooded more or go drier than what they are, you know, after the project. That's a big deal. And so.
Well, it's a valid concern from their standpoint.
It is a valid concern. And so, these, you know, I buy fishing licenses. They're not cheap. Hunting licenses are not cheap either. So, if you keep jacking up the hunting license prices and you're reducing the hunting grounds, that's a very legitimate concern. And so, I do see the point. So, it's hard to match different interests together and make it work, but that's what we're trying to do. So, I was appreciative of David Cohen and Dan Miller for putting this effort on to really try to, you know, create a better partnership and a better integration. And so hopefully we'll move forward on smoother ground, if you will.
Yeah, Dan was pretty impressed to me because he ended the meeting about, okay, well, how can this trail help the wildlife refuge? And that was a good spin on it, I thought. That the meeting ended with a positive note on it. Okay, well, here's all the problems, but what's good about it? And there was not a significant amount of comments, but it did end on an upward, you know, this can benefit if we look at it this way, too.
So here's my solution. As you get into that area, you have a little booth selling bright orange vests with a note saying, don't get shot, wear your vest. The money from the sale of the vests goes to support everything, and it reduces the number of people actually willing to go through there.
Yeah,
there
excellent.
Cool. Or makes it better target.
We're going to have to change the pedaling code, though. I don't want to go there. Okay, well, that sounds hopefully. So will you guys give us, as soon as you have notice on when that next meeting is?
As soon as we get the notes back,
okay.
We'll do that. We'll share those with you.
Excellent. And then you have we have a bullet point for grant extension. Is this on the Chalachki or which?
That's on the Lewis and Clark Trail.
Okay.
And so I think I may not have mentioned this before, but Dan Miller's boss. And you may have heard lately that the National Park Service is moving to Vancouver, San Francisco.
Yeah.
So we're going to be down here in Officer's Grove I think that's going to help us, quite honestly.
I think so too. That's yeah.
They're going to want to see some things going on here locally, so that's really cool. I haven't talked to Dan about it yet, about having all these bosses.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I like it. It's like, dang.
Okay.
All right. So PAB logo update. We have Barbara doing that. She's not here. Pretty much, the student tweaked the shifting of the logo for us. Laura was kind enough to put it on our copies here. You can kind of see it's more in line with the county logo. So that should be it for the logo. We probably won't be talking, we'll be talking about it in like 10 minutes when we talk about name tags, but other than that, in terms of the process, we're pretty much done. So definite kudos to Barbara for spearheading that whole project. And
do we have the artwork back yet from the actual artwork?
We have the, yes.
Okay,
all right. Hence the reason we're here. And then I didn't do it on the second page, so you could see the difference.
Oh, nice. There you go.
It looks much better, yeah. Okay, the Facebook page, chugging along. Kevin is definitely my main source of posts. He sends me pictures from his weekly wanderings, which is amazing. I posted the meeting today. This kind of ties into E on our agenda. I posted that we needed a youth member, and over 958 people saw the Facebook post, which is a ton because we only have 258 people like our page, so it definitely is getting shared and put in different forums. The bad news is we still have zero applicants, right?
Yes.
That's correct.
Okay, so what Jay, Laura, Bill, and I kind of discussed was it is going to be virtually, we want your opinion, but it is going to be virtually impossible to get a teenager to do something in the summer, like join a board, right? School, Chris says yes. Not going to happen. So, and we just don't want to like bully some defenseless teenager we know into doing it. Like, we want it to be someone who wants to be on this board. And so we're kind of pumping the brakes again until fall, and then going to try to recruit hard again in the fall. I made a youth member exit survey for Mackenzie and Sarah that I sent to them asking for feedback on what we could do better. I kind of want it to be a little more, Jay and I were talking, like, we want them to get some real world experience out of this, not just sitting here and nodding along to our meetings. We maybe want them to shadow someone or pick a project, like skate parks in the county, and our teens going to them. What do teens say about doing a presentation for us? Something to make it a little more
substantial,
but not overwhelming, because they're doing 100 other things and they're trying to be successful in school, but also making it making it something so they feel like they're not just sitting here listening to us drone on, because I feel like that's kind of how they maybe felt.
I think part of it's, I mean, they were only here, you know, a short amount of time. That I really would like to see getting a junior this time around, if possible. Okay. Just with that chance of another year, I think would. Because when you lose the whole summer, and then, like, you know, graduation time, and then the first couple months they're new, and it ends up not being a very long appointment if it's only 1 year. So.
Agreed.
And if we were to reach out to the guidance counselors at the high schools, because that's junior year is about the time that the kids start thinking, oh man, I've got to get my community service time in.
Yeah, that's what we were thinking.
Counselors, the career counselors, the scheduling counselors are the ones who have all those ideas for them and places to send them.
Okay, I'll do September. Is that too early to kind of, because everyone's getting back in?
We start talking about it maybe in August.
August. Okay.
That way, by the time September rolls around, the beginning of September, we've got information that can be out.
Okay.
And it may, I don't, and I'm not sure how Barbara, I mean, you guys marketed it before, but the CTE, the career and technical departments too, are doing great jobs with recruiting interns. Yeah. And that's essentially what this is. So they might be able to match us with somebody from a couple of the high schools that would
that's
be more
a really
qualified
good idea.
Than just the average kid walking off trying to find community service hours.
Okay, excellent. Yes.
You may even want to include some of the information on this particular opportunity in your booth when you send it out to the Athletic Union Associations July 4th.
That's a good idea. And so let's, for our August meeting, let's kind of, hopefully I'll have the exit surveys back from Sarah and McKenzie. Let's talk about them and then maybe brainstorm ways to, like, have some, something set in stone that they have to achieve or do when they're on the board this year, maybe, and kind of come to, that way when we're interviewing them in September, we can say, these are the requirements, can you handle that, or is it going to be too much? I mean, I'm hoping we have at least five people to choose from, would be my hope, so. Anyone else have any teenagers we can kidnap or? No.
Another couple years. So.
Yeah. All right, John's favorite subject, choo-choo trains. Let's go.
What?
God.
Can't you just, like, bugger off now since the trail part's done?
Oh.
You can just disappear?
Well, no.
Okay.
So.
Did you volunteer for something again?
No, but it got worse. So.
It got worse. You guys next month.
I thought things were finally starting to clean up. I saw the end of the process out there. And then one of the committee members said, you know, the area we're looking at, the overlay area that the county dictated is too small. And he came up with this proposal that took, I don't know, Amanda, you were there, weren't you? It was like the original area was like, what, 500 acres?
So the whole issue is what is considered adjacent to the railroad. And so the original definition, I think, was
one quarter mile.
One quarter mile.
Yeah.
So one quarter mile on either side of the railroad is considered in the zone for freight rail dependent uses, right? And apparently that had been settled on at the last meeting, and then they opened up this meeting and they said, we want to change it to a mile.
Oh wow!
So a mile, and not just a mile around the area we've been talking about, but a mile from city limits of Vancouver to city limits of Battleground.
He took
500 acres and turned it into 500,000, a million. I mean, it was.
Oh, no.
And I said what I could to try to dissuade him, but. It was a 6-1 vote, and I was the only one against it. So whereas before, you know, the Chulachi Trail went around the edge of this thing, and I was pretty much able to say, meh, you know, now they're talking about an overlay that's ginormous, and, you know, it opens up a whole new SEPA, you know, it just, wow.
Does that even fall into the intent, the original intent?
Yeah. No, it's going way beyond.
Who has
it's ridiculous.
That was a state legislature bill,
yeah,
right? So it's limited to its
Well, the bill, the state law doesn't specify an area.
Oh,
now, what we gave to the state in trying to get them to allow it specified a very limited area.
Right.
And we just, you know, quintupled it. So we've got a workshop with the county council on Wednesday. I expect that they will guffaw at it similar to how I did. And we'll see how that goes, and I'll regroup then.
So the county council has the final approval
yeah.
on the...
Yeah, this is all... Yeah, you know, it's just like this board. Yes. We have no authority.
Well, and it goes to the planning commission, too. Like, there's layers.
Oh, does it go to the planning commission before the county council?
I think so. I think it...
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Pass the
ball. I'm understanding the whole process, right? I kind of got shoved into the middle of it because Chris is out. But, yeah, I think there's, like... many layers before we have a final decision on it.
But. Yeah. So if the county says, you know what, you're right, we should expand the area, then we've got another discussion as to how does this really impact us.
Because it would destroy our vision of this trail.
Your trail. It would open up.
I feel pretty confident that the railroad manager, who has his issues, is also trying to keep the public face of the whole thing in mind. I feel pretty confident that the Chulachi Trail is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if we start opening up this huge area, I don't know. I've not looked at it from that perspective. And I don't know how many parks would be in this area. I know it's more than one. Because we're talking a really, really big area.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm my mouth was somewhat agape, and I was at a total loss. But I knew this was coming, because the guy had sent in his request ahead of time, and I looked at it and chuckled and thought, yeah, come on, nobody's going to go for that. should never underestimate the power of committee think. So.
Okay. Well, yeah. What an interesting update.
Well, thanks for enduring.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
We resist.
Yeah.
Which actually, it does mean, again, I expect the county council to see reason. They may open it up somewhat larger, and actually I would be in favor of that. I think the original version was too tight. And if they open it up within reason, we're still just fine. If for some reason they start nodding their heads in unison, then I'll call you and we'll have to sit okay. down and say, what does this really mean to
the
parks?
So is this, I mean, I know that the length, I believe, is like between 119th and 149th.
Yeah, that was the original. Yeah.
That stretch.
Yeah.
Now, the 1 mile radius, does that bring it up to 3 miles? Or, I mean, or actually,
yeah, so before it was
all the way around?
Yeah.
So actually, it makes it longer and...
And wider, yeah.
Well, and one of the things they talked about was skewing it. Right?
Yeah, but they didn't follow up on that.
Okay.
No.
I almost could not keep track, but they were talking about skewing it off to the side instead of having the railway in the middle, maybe because there's one parcel that they really want to get into the zone, and so that's what they're talking about.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. That's the reason why.
So does this segment go by the Cedars Golf Course area?
No, it's before that. So that's in the area where we've got two large farmers, one on the east side of 503, and on the west side. What are the two farmers? Is it
Lagler is one of them.
Lagler, at least in Ackerland?
Ackerland is the other two big farmers.
Yeah.
Ackerland's on the west side, I believe. Lagler's on the right, on the east.
No, Lagler's on both.
On both sides.
Yeah. And Lagler's the principal that there's...
Yeah. And that
700 acres that they want to take from them.
That's a reserve. Those two big properties where the farms are at. Anyways, that's probably what they're looking at.
Yeah.
That big acreage is a beautiful property. Okay. Well, thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Field trips.
So we're supposed to have our next field trip, I believe, because of scheduling. I'm going to be on vacation in July. It's going to be our next wave of field trips. And that was supposed to be the second phase of the Conservation Futures projects, so the southern projects. And I think Pat was quite ready for us. He's going to be gone, right, on that particular...
He was already had time set for other meetings that were really important. But he wanted to have extra time to do what he did before, which is get people...
Yeah, the sponsors of these projects. Remember how we had some sponsors that met us?
Which was really nice.
And that was really cool. And so that's what he'd like to do. And so he's asking if we can move that second phase field trip to August, so that provides him the time. But we can fill that July spot with park projects that we're working on. So we've got a list of 5 different projects, 5 or 6. So Otto Brown, it's under construction right now, but by the time we get up in July, it should be on the finishing touches. And speaking of which, my guess is that we might be doing some kind of ribbon cutting ceremony or something. I don't know yet. I need to reach out to the folks around there. I don't know if they've got an active neighbor association out there. And so that's a yes or no. I was talking to Jeff Mize about that. And I don't know if we want to push that, but you know, like with Mulata, when we had Sorensen and Kelsey, when we had a ribbon cutting ceremony for that, but that was basically the Flooded Neighborhood Association sponsored that and made that happen.
And the Lighthead Park and Raspberry Fields and Sergeant Crawford Park.
Right. But then we had Tower Crest and we actually had something scheduled, but then that kind of dropped off, so we never did do anything there. So it's kind of hit and miss when we do these groundbreaking ceremonies, ribbon cutting ceremonies. And so we'll kind of see where that goes. I'm going to try to reach out to some folks and see if that's going to happen or not. Critter Creek Community Park, we'll go take a look at that one. Cozy Camp, we'll go look at that. And those two, just so you know, Tuesday of this week, we met Scott Brantley, primarily, Matt Hall with our construction division. Interviewed some consultants to go through the permitting planning side of that. And so they're working on that right now. And then our last one is Curtin Springs Wildlife Park. I know we've taken you on a field trip there before, but a lot of things have changed. And so we'll have to take you on that trip as well. And if you do have some time, there's been some changes over at Heritage Farm, so I'll take you to those sites. That sound good? It's all kind of in the local area.
Yeah,
it's great. It'll take a long time, probably a couple hours. And then, so that'll be our July field trip.
Cool. July 20th, and I'll send an invitation out. Milad, I'll keep you on that invitation.
So I'm going to get that on my calendar now.
So we'll do an invitation as we get a little closer to you.
So nothing to jump on. Nothing in June, nothing this month. So it'll be July and August.
Yeah, I'll be on vacation next week. So
good for you.
I'll be going to Lake Village now.
Good for you.
So that's the plan.
What time will we be doing that?
So we can do either morning shot like 9 to 11.
9 to 11
later on if you want.
I'll just block a period. So I've got
probably about 9. Let's say 9 to 12 just for kicks.
Just add it to your phones here.
Barbara's not here. John and Kevin, you want to give us your recap of the North tour? What highlights?
East Fork Lewis River was impressive to me. Size of the scope of that.
Yes.
That I had no idea that.
That's
I think that was neat. John, I don't want to take all the thunder.
No, keep going.
The Optimist was interesting. I think that's going to be an interesting project with that camp down there. For long-term longevity is what's going to happen to it if indeed it does get the conservation. My two real big takeaways.
Yeah. Similar. I showed up partway into it, so I missed the first park. The Optimist definitely... It was a great... lesson in the value of just a conservation easements and how much it's hopefully going to keep that organization and that park up and running. And worst case scenario, now if that park fails, it's, you know, it's not that they can't just sell it and have it go away. It'll always be there. So that was just a lesson there for me and how these things worked. Definitely neat land. Access issues are kind of funky. And then, yeah, the Lewis River land, that one. It's going to end up this very, very large, amazing complex someday. That's just fun to envision.
Just to let you know that the Mason Creek property, that was the one that we put way over all the way down. The East Fork Willis was in the background there. We did run into a little problem there recently. That is that the appraisal came in much higher than what I was expecting it to be. And secondly, there's an airport there. There's a strip.
I remember seeing that, yeah.
And so even though we're buying the properties, we have to piece out the actual landing strip. So we've got to do some kind of boundary line adjustments on either side. So we'll have a piece on the river airport, and then we'll have another piece on this side. That's if we buy it. So
which airport is that? Do you know the name?
It's just a private landing strip.
Just somebody's private
strip. Between all those ownerships, you know.
You can see it out there far.
You can see it out there. It kind of parallels the river.
Were they an Arrow? Was that an Arrow neighborhood or whatever they call that? Where, you know.
Yeah, all the property owners.
All the property owners threw in. And
yeah. So we're buying pieces. It kind of comes in, it goes like this, and the airport's trip comes right across all of them. And so,
what do you think is going to happen?
Well, the biggest challenge is the cost. So, can we afford it? So, I think it came in like $300,000 higher than expected. So, I haven't talked to Pat about, you know, next steps on that yet. But I kind of took a little bit of the wind out of it. It's like, wow, this came in a lot more than we expected it to be. So we'll see where that goes.
Laura, do you want to talk about the name tags?
Sure. So, Farmer gave me a sample of one that she likes. It's got the really strong magnetic back on it, rather than having pins or clips that might damage clothing. So, we looked at a few places. We went to the vendor that she really likes, and that's the one at the top. So, it's just really... guys want? Do you want lightweight plastic with the laser etching in it? Do you want something that's more just basically this is just something that's been done on the computer and then laminated on here? Or
do you want to pass that around?
Sorry?
Pass that around?
Yeah.
Okay. Here.
Then are there's metal engraving, you know, they can do just about anything. The gentleman that's in Hazeldale, he quoted us at a pretty good price of $8 each and no setup fees.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, yeah, so the others wanted setup fees that ranged from $30 to $40. Wouldn't have to pay the setup fee ever again, but that increased the cost. So the starting cost was around $10. Just really, it would be nice just to support somebody local as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just need to know what it is that you want. Do you want it to be just like this? Do you want it to be engraved? Would you prefer metal?
I want the ones that I'm not going to poke holes in my clothes.
Yes.
So the magnets.
Magnets. Magnet and durable is good because these things get stuck in your pocket and go through the wash.
This one seems really durable.
Yeah, so something like that is fine. As far as going the extra level of actually engraving it,
not a big deal.
Engraving tends to get tore up too. You know,
also true.
Throw it in your jewelry box or wherever you throw it. You know,
although that one seems a little bit blurry. I don't know if it's the coloring.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to talk to him about that.
You know, maybe I don't think the engraving is that big a deal if we can get a sharper image of what that is. I'm sure that's projected on the piece of...
Is that $10 engraving?
The other one is the $10 was engraving, yes. So I'd have to talk to him more about his products.
Yeah. Well, let's do it this way. Is having a clear picture is worthwhile, mm-hmm. and for the price difference, I personally don't much care. But beyond that, you know, beyond having something that's clear, I'm not personally that concerned.
I think it might have to be a little bit bigger because so you can read the lettering around it.
Well, yeah, the logo's a little small.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Do you want the logo bigger because it says it has the Clark County Parks Advisory on it, and then the name a little bit smaller, and not have this on the bottom, whereas that's all we did in the sample was just did the logo and
the name.
The beauty about having the stuff on the bottom of it is you can see it. Like for instance, when you're putting it, you can see quickly what they are rather than trying to read it off the logo.
Okay.
So you can say, okay, Barbara, oh, Parks Advisory Board, rather than its logo.
Right, what's that logo?
More, yeah. But the brand recognition of having the logo there, I think, is important as well. So okay. Maybe it's too busy having all three things, name, logo, and, you know.
Unless you make it a little bigger.
No. Make the logo bigger.
Is he able to run samples for patients as well?
I can ask him.
Maybe some different renditions.
I think that particular tag was me that his shot.
Yes, this was.
So the consensus is metal,
magnetic.
I mean, whatever can make our logo the clearest. Do we want our name spelled out on the bottom, the name of our organization spelled out on the bottom? Raise your hand if you do. I just want it way smaller font because it is like that one's a little busy for me. There's a lot going on that name tag. So smaller, look, maybe make the name a teeny bit smaller, not dramatically, but.
You want first and last name.
Yeah. All right, does that sound good to everyone?
Yep.
Okay.
Sounds good to me.
Give it a go. Sounds good.
Thank you for doing that research, Laura. That's awesome. Sure. Barbara wants to get volunteers to table at the Phillida Park 4th of July event. I will maybe email her and see what kind of shift she wants to start up and have her send something out if people are interested in doing that.
I'd be interested in helping kind of time dependent.
I'll do it too,
kind of
yeah.
Time dependent.
Okay, so I'll email her and then either I'll probably, whatever's easiest.
Maybe
for
a sign up sheet or something, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, like she did with the community safety one,
right.
Too. Okay. Does anyone else have any sort of events that would be good? I mean, besides what's on the back here, anyone else have anything that would be good for us to pop up that coming up that you'd want me to include in that email?